home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Rated G Radio. I am so thrilled tonight. We're going to be welcoming Mark DePina. We call him Dip because everybody in the world calls him Dip. And he is going to be our poetry reciter and author for the night. He's calling in live from Sydney, Australia, where it's actually a springtime Thursday afternoon. And Mark will be joining us in just a quick moment. But I want to give you a quick recap for what's happening the rest of the week as well. Tomorrow, we have Jessie Neat. She's an intuitive advisor, and she'll be taking your calls live at 7 p.m. California time and answering your calls. And then on Friday, we've got DJ David B. out of Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota. He is providing us a two-hour set of his dance remixes. I think we're going to do the show early and get the Labor Day started. And I just found out from Dip that it's actually Father's Day in Australia this weekend, so we're going to have him talk about that as well. I also want to let you know that next week, I know this is kind of telegraphing in advance, but next week we have a gentleman who goes by the name of Soul Dancer. I'm not kidding. That's his legal name. It's Soul Dancer. And he is going to be telling you how you can get your cell phone paid for every month for free. There's more to it than that. But Soul Dancer is going to be our guest next Thursday, and I want to make sure to promote his appearance. We've got guests all week next week, so there's not a shortage of that at all, but I want to make sure you tune in next Thursday as well. And tonight, if you happen to be in Southern California and looking for something to do in the next 28 minutes, head on over to the Orange County Pride's office. They're at 414 West 4th Street in Santa Ana. You can be part of the Pride Open Forum. It's an opportunity to talk about event planning for 2015 and 16. I encourage you to go do that. And my last little bit of news, and this is new news, brand new news that just kind of evolved today, and so there's going to be much more information coming out shortly, but I have partnered with a travel company called Best Single Travel. We're going to figure out a fun name for it. It might be Rated G Radio Listener Cruise or something like that. But we're going to be giving a very special offer about a week-long Mexican Riviera cruise this coming February, where you can get away for an entire week, including excursions on land. That means like, I don't know, I've got to get it all worked out, but things like beach parties or zip line or snorkeling adventures, things like that. I've got a great package we're going to be putting together for listeners, whether you're single, coupled, gay, or straight, or anywhere in between of any of those types of demographics. We're going to have a package put together for you, and you can come join me and all the Rated G Radio listeners in the Mexican Riviera this coming February. So there's more on that as the days and weeks progress, but I wanted to give you that news first. And now I am thrilled to welcome back Mr. Mark DePina. We're just going to call him Dip for the rest of the show. I default to call him Mark just because I have that written down, even though every month I know I'm going to call you Dip. But Dip, welcome back to the show.
G'day, Garrett. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. I can hear you this month. Last month, we were trying to call in and we couldn't get the phones to work. I couldn't hear you at all.
Oh, that was... I've got to say, there's a professional in you. You took some of my poems and you had a really good go at reciting them. You'll never do that again.
Here's the deal. So, for everybody who missed last month's show with Mark, Mark, by the way, gets a huge rating of people that tune in to listen to him recite poetry. When Mark is scheduled, they don't call in to listen to me recite poetry. Okay, so Mark, bless his heart, we're having technical difficulties. We weren't able to get him to Skype in, and so I'm just kind of on the fly for the entire episode. I don't have a plan B because Mark was there. Mark was trying valiantly to get in, so he gets an A triple plus
for an hour.
For an hour, he's trying to get in, and we can't get him in. So I'm sitting here stalling and carrying on. So Mark emails me some of his poems, and he says, well, you could go ahead and read these on air. Yeah, you message
and when
me
you message poem. Oh, this when you message a poem onto chat on Facebook, that because my poems are in 4-line rhyme and they're a certain width, so it started to put the words on another line, and poor Garrett's trying to read these off the cuff. First time he's ever seen these poems. I'm feeding him these poems as we're trying to get this connection, and poor bugger, he is absolutely struggling to get the rhythm right. And I'm sitting there going, I'm cringing. Oh, my poems. So I was so glad we got on today to have another go at these.
Mark,
and
you've been trying, Garrett. There's no way you're going to read another poem of mine ever again. I will fly to California if I have to, but you're not reading any more. And I said, okay, that's great. I know we're going to
And I'll never be a radio host. We'll have a deal. I won't radio host, and you don't read my poetry.
Oh, that's a fair trade. That's
mate, it was a great effort, honestly.
Yeah, but it was...
It wasn't... Go on.
It was painful.
It was a great effort.
Yeah, it might have been a good effort, but it was painful. I felt worse for you because you were going, I'm trying to, you know, call in. I'm doing all these things. And I said, Mark... I know, but it's just, you know, but what do? We're on live radio. It's not like we can sit here and just kind of, well, here, let me just put you on hold for, you know, 10 minutes or something like that. When we go live, we go live. There's no redo. So it's always an adventure every day.
Certainly is. And that's the beauty of this. It's live, it's raw, it's unedited. So what happens, it's spontaneous. And these are the glitches you just got to put up with. And I'm learning a lot. Like, this is, what, our sixth time we've been on? And
something like that. I do it every month.
I'm assuming that...
How clear you sound tonight, too. We have a new way for you to connect in. And it sounds exactly like you're next door to me. So I need to let you know that I'm so thrilled that you were able to connect in so easily today.
Well, do you know what? This is the first time with you. You know how paranoid I was about getting on after last month's sort of debacle. And that was no fault of either of us. It was just the blog talk thing. But basically, this new system, I was paranoid that it wasn't going to work. But up until 2 o'clock last night, I couldn't get my microphone to work, and I thought, oh, it's going to be another botch up. And so it's just so, I'm just so happy that I can actually connect this time. So this new blog talk, it definitely is clearer than it was before.
Oh,
and
my God.
With the new
great.
With the new headphone sets too, it's all good. So hopefully this is all positive, and we will have a good connection every month, you know. It's because, like, you know, there's 3,200 poems I've got to catch up with you.
Well, you know, we could go a little long tonight if we needed to. So, if, you know, if we run a couple of minutes over, I'll be okay with that.
Really?
I'll be okay.
What's
been going on in your world? Because I know it's, you know, you're heading into springtime, so the weather's going to start to warm up a little bit for you.
Yeah, spring started 3 days ago, like September, what was it? October, November, and then December's the start of summer. So we have our spring now, which would be your equivalent to fall, I suppose.
Right. Really? Yeah.
What's just started for you 3 days ago would be officially your fall, wouldn't it? Is that what I call it? Fall?
Think fall really
or
starts
autumn?
For us until
autumn?
The end of September, and it kind of changes every year. But I mean, we're in probably some of the hottest weather that we've had this year. We had the equivalent of 47 degrees Celsius when I was up in LA on Friday coming home on the freeway. It was 47 degrees Celsius or 117 degrees. So it was friggin' hot.
That's amazing.
It's crazy.
47 degrees.
47.
I mean, we get the hottest days, 42. This summer is supposedly this El Nino or Nino, whatever they call it, and they're predicting a hot summer. And one of the things that we have in our area in Sydney is the bushfires that can start from really simple things as just a cigarette butt or actually just natural. But we had some amazing fires through the national park, like where I live in Cronulla. You look across the river and there's got the national park, which is like all this natural bushland, and it was absolutely just completely on fire right across the ridge in 94. I don't think I've ever seen it. It was just amazing to see. But we got these eucalypt trees and they're full of oil. And that's the biggest issue, is that they just like can just explode, these trees, in the heat. that much. Now, I don't think you have eucalypt trees in America, do you? Trees that
I think so, yeah, but not anything crazy. You know, that's I think, but we've got forest fires that are going crazy on the western part of the United States right now. But weird, so it's, you know, I think it's worldwide.
Well, there's definitely climate changing all the time, and you know, people try and sort of define it, but you can't. You just can't predict. Like, it would have been a week ago, you could have been in board shorts in the water, and then you think you put all your stuff away, all your wetsuits, and next minute, it's freezing again. You know, you just can't pick this weather, and with the warm temperature, everyone wants to get back into the surf, and I've just got out of the water. Then actually, I had a wave before I came on air, and I always come out dripping wet and race down, thinking, oh, I've got to get home to catch you. But it's funny, the other day, Garrett, I posted a couple of just some shots of the local beach, and you made the comment on Facebook how it's just like Huntington Beach, and I said, without the piers and the crowd. Because I just always assume Huntington Beach has got those piers and the actual where they have the major surfing event.
We do have some nice waves, but you know, every time I see a picture of you, it looks like you're riding this 12-foot, you know, huge wave, and I'm like, okay, we don't have waves like that.
That I'm on. I'm not really one for big waves. I love my surfing, but I know my limits. We sort of got some great spots to surf around Cronulla and the local area, but as you know, one of my favourite things is to go across to the Mentawai Islands, which is in the ocean, and it's about northwest of Indonesian Bali chain, like where the islands are. There's a runs parallel with the coast off Sumatra. And it's a resort I go that takes only 10 surfers on this land camp, and this will be my 8th trip. And this time I'm taking both my boys, who are now 31 and 30, and it's like a father and son thing. And I've taken my youngest boy up a couple of times, but this will be the first time I'm going to have both the boys. And I'm really looking forward to the old father and son trip, because my eldest son is just married in October, and I'm certain that in the next year or so that they'll be looking at starting a family, and this is a small window to grab them both before things get a bit serious again with, you know, it's very difficult when you sort of have kids at that age, because I booked 7 spots for this with Aaron and Matthew's friends, and one by one they fell out because of marriages or having children. And where I'm just, mate, as I said, I got made redundant at work after 35 years at the local oil refinery, which is like a severance. I got a severance pay, so I'm actually redundant or retired 8 months now. And my life now is surfing and writing, and I just got the passion to write. And as I said to you that, off air, that listeners that haven't heard how I started, it was only through Facebook that I found I had a passion to write. I was asked to come along and look at surfing photos about 5 years ago on Facebook, and I started to make comment in rhyme, and I just really enjoyed rhyming words. And some 3,267 poems down the track, and my second book coming out, I've just never lost the passion, and I sort of mainly get inspired by the images on Facebook. Most of my poems are all basic 4-line rhyme, and they're very simple. They're not very metaphorical, or you know, they're not. You don't have to get out of the thesaurus to understand what they mean. And I've got a bit of a following on my Facebook site called Dip Tales Poems from the Heart. And then I think our common friend was Dr. Jeff Mullen in South Africa, who suggested I get in contact.
Well, he's in South Africa. You're in Australia. I'm here in the United States. And here we are, all friends, and I think we chat with each other at least fairly regularly. You know, and can you imagine what a small world this now is with the beauty of Facebook?
Do you know what? Like, people knocks Facebook for what it is, and, you know, social network. Look, it's been a great platform for me, and I've so many friends via writing, and I go to another site called Fan Story, which is a site for writers and poets who they critique your work, and you get to sort of you're allowed to put out 2 poems a day. So with my 3,000 odd poems, I've got another 30 years of poems coming to, you know. But the funny thing is, you get a bit of a fan base, and look, as much as I admire wordsmiths, everyone's got their different styles of writing, and I've always just enjoyed the basic four-line rhyming poetry, and nearly all my poems are based around photos. So the images, the poems I tell you tonight, if you went to my Facebook site, you'd realise, and because you'd see the image that inspired me to write the poem. So it's a pity that you haven't got video where you can actually see the picture. So when I go to the nursing homes and recite my poetry, I actually have a PowerPoint presentation, and I project up on the wall the image that inspired me to write the words. And so the old folk sit in the chairs, the ones that don't fall asleep on me, you know, and they look at they look at the image as I'm saying the poem on the lectern to the side, and then I've got a little laser clicker, and I just change the image. But it's good because they can understand how I was inspired by the picture, and that's what I said. My second book of poems is called Poems from the Sea, and basically it's around the amazing ocean photographers that I've met through Facebook. There's a couple of guys from America, namely Morgan Mason. There's another fellow we've got Australian Tim Bonython. I've got Warren Keelan from Wollongong, which is a southern suburb of Sydney. And his friend is Steen Barnes. And they put out some amazing ocean photos that are just incredible. And so I just see the photo and I just put words to them. And I'm just getting their blessing now to use their photos, where I get the higher resolution photo on the right-hand side of the page and the poem on the left, and that tells about the picture. But I'm just want to get their blessing to use high resolution photos in the book to get the maximum. So it's a win-win. I get to promote their work and their page, and, you know, get people to go to their site to see their beautiful photography, and I get to do my poetry and show these pictures to everyone, which is great, because most poetry books don't have the pictures like I have. The first book, Poems from the Heart, was basically like that, where I put the words into the picture. And I only made 500 copies, and it was all just a bit of fun, and people liked it. And I've just got this passion. Now that I'm not working, I can concentrate on my poetry. And which way I want to go now is more to songwriting, and I've been playing with revisiting my poems and looking at putting lyrics to the poems and choruses to the poetry, because this face of music is like poetry is and songs are music to poetry, and that's what I found. A lot can be converted, and I've had a few friends, as I've said before on the air, that are actually have laid down a few songs to my poems, and what I'd love to do is to actually lay down a whole album of my poems to music. A friend of my son's, I didn't even know he could play guitar, and I heard him in the garage. He's been staying in our, we've got a little sort of a granny flat thing in the garage, and I heard him playing a guitar, and I told him that I've got a few poems here, and he grabbed them, and he laid down these tracks, and I just did with the garage band. It's just a little simple application, that, you know, on the iPhone, and oh my God, it sounds great. I was hoping he'd be back. He does this fly in, fly out from the mines, and he's just only came back last night, and I would have loved to have got you a copy of his song and read the poem that inspired him to write it, because he has got the voice. This guy's like 6'4". He's got the tats going, and I looked at him and I thought, he wouldn't be into music, and honestly, he has the most amazing voice. So next month, we'll definitely give you the copy of the song, so that you can play to the audience, and then I
oh
will
gosh,
say the
yeah,
poem
you know
is inspired. You know, that's where I want to go with my songwriting at the moment. But I've got so many things I want to get out to you today because of the last month. But remember, last month was when I had together. I think it was about the time when and we're talking about surfing, and the Jeffreys Bay was a surfing event in South Africa, and we have a fellow competitor, a pro surfer named Mick Fanning, and everyone knows the incident in Australia because it was pretty famous, where he was in a heat, and basically he was attacked by a shark, and it got tangled in his leg rope. It snapped the leg rope, and then a wave came, and you never saw him, and you just saw the pectoral fins sticking out, and everyone just thought the worst. So I was watching it live on Fox television, and I jumped out of the chair thinking, no, please, you know. I thought he was gone, and so did everyone else. And when they grabbed him off the out of the water onto the jet ski, I think the adrenaline was still racing through his, you know, blood. And he got back to the shore, and he saw the incident, and I think it knocked him around. But that story about the shark, and since then, in North New South Wales, you know, around the coastal towns of surfing of Byron Bay and Ballina, we've had four or five shark attacks where there's been a few fatalities, and some have been really badly injured where they've lost a leg or a hip, or bite into their boards. I don't know what the story is with these great whites. My theory was that Mick punched this shark with his fist to get it away, and he's gone back and told all the other sharks that these humans are giving us a hard time. Let's go and attack them. That was my little joke, but it is a bit of a worry because, you know, when you go surfing, it's the last thing you want to think about is these great whites coming along. But it's always in your mind. And when you see something like this live on air of Mick being attacked, it brings you back down to earth. And you go away to these exotic places, and you're all adrenalined up about the waves, but you don't think what's under the waves, because the water is, honestly, Garrett, when you go to these islands, the water is crystal clear, and it's, you can see the bottom, and it looks really, really shallow, but in all the coral fish, and sometimes you see a little reef shark, but, you know, I'm hoping there's no, you know, 5 metre great whites hanging around. It's the last thing you want in those places. But what that did with the incident with Mick, and inspired me to write a bit of a humor. I was trying to make light of the situation, and I wrote this poem, and we'll get into this because this is what I was going to say to last the interview that we missed out on. There, but so you can imagine Mick Fanning's in this event, and there's like you've got Kelly Slater as one of your everyone knows Kelly Slater as, you know, 11 times world champion. He's in this event with Mick and all these famous surfers that are really, this is what one of the legs of about 11 tour. It's called the World Surf League now, and it's about 11 major events to make up, and the winning of the points, you know, get 1,000 points for a win and whatever, and they add up and they become a world champion from that. You don't necessarily have to win that event. You could come second in every event and have enough points to take out the world title. So
that's
you can
incredible.
Imagine, yeah. So Mick's out in this event with three in the water, right? And Mick's waiting for a wave. Next minute, you see all this rustle in the water, and then you see this fin come up, and Mick's sort of rolling, and then a wave comes in, and you don't see Mick, and everyone's thinking the worst. And what he'd done in that meantime, he's punched the shark away, and whether it was just inquisitive, because if it was a great wave. But the theory is that, you know, if you ever seen those footage of great whites attacking a seal, they come up from the depth and they just go, they virtually launch themselves and the seal's in the mouth, you know. And there's different theories about, you know, that these sharks were, if they were fair dinkum attacking Michael at the time, they would have come up from the depth. There's theories that he was just inquisitive and all this. But you know what? If you're out there surfing and you get a shark come along and take your leg rope and snap it in half, surely it must be psychologically affecting you. And Mick's now going on, and he's going to be, he competed in Chopu, which is in Tahiti. since then. And then the event, I think after that was, well, you had it at Huntington, and I think it's going to Trestles as well. There's, they might have been, I get a little bit lost on which of the events, because there's about three or four after the event before they go to Hawaii, and the World Surf League finishes in Hawaii. But this poem I wrote, it's a bit of tongue in cheek. I was just trying to make light of the situation, because at the time it was pretty traumatic for everybody. And it goes like this. It goes, Iron Mick Fennings, not Stockard Channing, but he sure does know how to punch. In the J-Bay Pro, he puts on a show, and nearly gets eaten for lunch. Some great white puts up a fight, but Mick screams, interference. Not even a wave, now fucking behave, you've got to put on an appearance. So good old Mick, he thinks real quick and lands with a left and a right. That great white, he knew every trick, but didn't know that old Mick could fight. So the Noah has a goer and bites his board leash, bites his leash clean in half. What was he thinking? Mick has priority, sheesh. That great white was having him the last laugh. So the event gets called off and we all go scoff, scoff. Something fishy seems to be going down. It was Slater in a grey suit. He was in a hot pursuit, for he knew he was losing his crown. So old Mick, it was clear, couldn't bite off an ear, so he punched off the old fucker in the back. Slater got the shits that Mick got too many pits, so he thought his best defence was attack. So it was a bit of a swear there, but basically what I'm saying is there's a bit of a rivalry with the top guys about, and I've just made out that it was actually Kelly Slater dressed in a grey suit that wasn't really a shark. It was hitting back at Mick. So that was just a bit of a light on the situation. And but you know, to Mick's credit, he's put it behind him. And one of the other Australians was a guy named Julian Wilson, and Julian it really affected Julian as well. And I don't know whether Julian's actually he's probably suffered just as much as Mick to see that. It'd be pretty traumatic, you know, to see it all happening in front of you. And Julian was sort of paddling as fast as he could towards Mick. Now, you don't know how you're going to react in a situation, and you know, it's the old flight or flight. You know, you don't know whether you're going to just absolutely freeze or go and sort of, you know, the first thing that Julian thought about was trying to save Mick. It was just surreal, you know, the whole thing, to see it live on TV. You know, it's not like it was a sort of Sharknado, one of those movies. It was actually happening, and it's the first time in a competition that's ever been televised like that. And I'm sure there's been attacks or in just free surfing, well, it has, but to see it in live television all around the world, everyone saw it, and I think there'd be a lot of surfers that are pretty traumatized, you know, when they go out, that they think about that all the time now. So, but
Mark. You know, as somebody who's been a surfer for pretty much all your life, do you ever remember getting any type of training or advice from anybody about what happens if you do see sharks and that type of stuff? And not to be turning it all, you know, non-poetry here, but I've never asked anybody that.
You know what? You don't get training on it, but look, you're aware that you're visiting their domain. You know, the ocean is for the sharks, and there's all this thing. Oh, we got to cull. We got to get rid of the sharks. But at the end of the day, you know, we're visiting their environment, and you're going to get this issue. I mean, there's actually a magnetic shark repellent band or something that. Yeah, you know, you'd think that if it was that bad, that people that those sort of people that make that product would be pushing it left, right, and center now to get everyone to wear it, and supposedly puts out a magnetic signal and puts the shark off. But when you're out there, I mean, there's no real train. I mean, how do you train for a shark? You don't even know it's coming. You know, you hear these stories that they circle and all this, but with these great whites, the story is they just come up from the depth and just propel themselves. So I don't think you can actually train for that. You know, although to Mick's credit, his reaction was to punch it. I mean, you hear, if you can punch it in the nose, you know, you're going to put it off. Mate, I don't know how you react if you've seen a 5 metre great white come in and said, oh, well, I'm going to punch this thing in the nose. I mean, you don't know how you're going to react and how it's going to attack. But Look, you know, as a surfer, I suppose it's always in the back of your mind, and you know, the amount of attacks that have had in the amount of the surfing population is probably still a pretty small percentage, but it is very prevalent, and there's all these theories about that the bait fish are being, and all the main fish are being fished out, and they're looking for other you know, predatory or the prey and all this sort of stuff. They're all going to have these theories, you know, forevermore. But who knows what's happening you get these. They put these they put a marker
like
on
tag?
You know, and tagging, and they tag these sharks, and the distance they travel in a season is just incredible. You know, they've caught these things where they've tagged them in Australia, and they've found them in South Africa. So they're not known not to be just territorial, but they'll travel a long way, and you just don't know where they've come from. And just shows you the speed of those things, and this, like when you see some of these footage that you see on Facebook, someone like fishos that have actually filmed these sharks attacking, and it seems to be very prevalent in South Africa that they attack seal colonies and that. But whenever you see bait fish out in the water and there's a lot of flapping around, you start to think, oh, what's chasing the bait fish?
Right. Yeah. But
anyway, that's So getting back to the ocean and the surfing, I mean, I'll never lose the passion to surf, and basically, when I'm now 60 years old, and I have been surfing since I was 12, and, you know, I'm just an average surfer in the area, but when you get a passion to do something, you look at those dangers, but they're always in your mind, but when you see the waves you're getting, your adrenaline's up for other things, and, you know, it's the last thing you want to think about. But, so, like I say, with my ocean poultry, I just love to write to those, and I've written quite a few, and this Morgan Mason, who's an American from California, actually, he is only about, I think he must be in his late 20s, his photography is just so inspiring to write to, and I could do a whole poultry book based on just Morgan's amazing images that he shares on Facebook. You've got to remember, all my poetry that I get inspired by images are all shared photos on Facebook. And I still get in contact with these photographers to get their blessing to use their photos in a book form. And I say to them, like, I want to promote your work as well as promote my poetry, because without your images, I wouldn't have the inspiration to write them, you know. So when I say these poems today, a lot of these poems that I write have an image to them. And if the listeners do like what I write, they can go to my site, this Diptails Poems from the Heart on Facebook, and they can actually see the image that and the poem, because virtually all my 3,000-odd poems are all on Facebook. So they can see them. And but
well, I think we need them in a very expensive coffee table book format with a very pretty picture off to the left-hand side. So
yeah, well, that,
you know,
the reason why I do the table book is because I could do it as an e-book, but I love the idea of being able to pick it up and it's sitting there. And I make it landscape orientation so that it doesn't fit in a bookshelf, so it's stuck on a coffee table, so you can just pick it up and read it. And what I like to do is do a book set. Like, I've got Poems from the Heart, which I only did 500 copies, and I want to do Poems from the Sea, Poems from the Soul, and Poems from the Edge. I've got enough poems to do 30 or 40 books if I wanted
wow.
to. But, and it is a passion, and I do get on there, and I'll sit back up to, you know, all hours of the night writing, and it's usually that witching hour time about 12 o'clock till about 2 that I, when everyone's gone to bed and it's quiet, and I start to, you know, surf through the all the images on Facebook, and I'll see a picture, and then I'll get inspired, and then I'll see another one, and it goes on and on. But if I get them all together, I'm sure I could categorize them and do enough for, you know, easy. Usually 30-odd books, whether they'd be all... Because, you know, in the end of the day, there's only so many words that rhyme to... when I talk about my writing, my romance poems, you know, you've got emotion, devotion, an ocean, potion, lotion. There's certain words that do come up quite a bit in my poetry because they're topical and they do fit the position. But I don't normally write many non-rhyming verses. I like the challenge of trying to make poems rhyme and make sense. And hence, you'll find that when you go there, you might only see a handful of poems that are written in sort of non-rhyming verse. But, so getting back to just on the C bit, before I get into the... I was going to try and pick up a theme today, and because I'm writing a lot of these, revisiting my poems and writing a lot of choruses to them, I've got a lot of, like, romance poems, and as I said, the joke is I haven't got a romantic bone in my body, and my wife can't believe I write this stuff. But I just find it, you know, I should go and get a job with Hallmark, I suppose. But I just really loved writing. And the other thing was, I had a dear friend who I met from my daughter did Nippers with her daughter, and we hadn't seen each other for a long time, and she saw my name on Facebook, and she said, "Is that you? Are you Ashley's dad?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "I remember I was Tara's mother," and so we struck up a friendship, and she just recently lost her husband the other day, and I got a shock because I hadn't heard from him for a while, and he just had a major heart attack and died. It was unexpected, and wow. And she said, "Look, you know, I'd love you to write something." Well, actually, I suggested I'd love to write something for you. I've never met John, but I'd known Dimity, and we'd sort of, because just from Facebook, and basically I wrote her a eulogy for going on some of the things she just mentioned when she mentioned about him dying, and I put it up there on her site, and I said, "Look, Dim, I wrote a poem," and she was absolutely over the moon. And it I love that sort of stuff where you hit an emotion with some people, and I've written about 30 eulogies for people, and I get a buzz out of doing that sort of stuff, and you know, things from the heart, and that's why I've called my poems from the heart, and diptails from the poems from the heart, because all my poems are all simple and basic, but they're all heartfelt, and that's what I'm trying to get out. So, but getting back here, I know I'm digressing, but I'm trying to get out as much as I can with it. This one's called Time and Tide, and it was sort of I suppose it was an inspiration from that poem, that song Message in a Bottle with Sting from The
sure,
Police.
Yeah.
I've always liked that song. I love that song, and I wrote this poem, and you'll get the gist of why I've actually mentioned Sting in it, and it goes like this. It's called Time and Tide. Time and tide will take me there. Time and tide will take me back. I walk this beach without a care, for it's time that I don't lack. I place a message in a bottle. I throw it out to sea. I watch the tide take it full throttle and watch in hope to see that someone finds my message of love and share this nautical devotion. Someone on another beach above who has the same love with the ocean. It wasn't just Sting who threw one out and sang his tale of hope. There's a billion people out there and about who walk their beach and scope along the shores of their own beach as they are lapped there by the tide, and maybe see a bottle just in reach, pick it up and look inside. To read the note, and to their surprise, realize out somewhere, there are a billion people who walk a beach with time and tide without a care. So you can see what I was getting at. Someone walked, because of my love of the ocean, which, as you know, was sort of brought on by my father, man, which... incidentally, and this is just digressing, is Father's Day this Sunday, first Sunday in the month in September in Australia. And like Mother's Day in May, we have Father's Day. I don't know whether you celebrate those days in America. It might be.
We do, but they're a little bit different. I think we have. I should know this, but you know, we have Mother's Day in like May, and then I think we have Father's Day in June, or maybe it's the other way around.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, well, this is my, and it's always a bit sort of melancholy for me because I lost my dad, as you know, 6 years ago, and you know, we were pretty close. And I've actually said a lot of poems before, and in my poetry book, the first one, Poems from the Heart, the start of the book is a picture of my wife when she was 23, and I love this photo as a slide photo, and I wrote this heartfelt poem, and Lee's never really liked Facebook. Facebook, and she's very private, and she can't believe that I can write romance poems. So I deliberately put her in the book, and I wrote this really romantic sort of poem and never told her. And she just picked up the book, and she said, "What's this?" I said, "Oh, that's my coffee table book of poems." She said, "Oh," and then she's opened the book, and there's a picture of her when she was 23, and she says,
"Oh."
And she's written this, you know, I can see she was welling up reading this, you know, I wrote these really heartfelt sort of words. And then, because she's been totally against me on Facebook, because I spend hours on there, and she's gone, "Geez, you could have photoshopped the pimple off my forehead, you know." Like, she's gone from, like, "I don't give a bugger about Facebook," to, you know, "Well, you could have made my photo better." So, and then at the end, the last picture in my book is my picture of my dad, and that poem, I think I've said it before, it's the one in the book, "Another Angel Came Today," picked up my dad, and it's about losing my father, and how he gave me the love of the sea, and the letter back from heaven, how he, 4 years later, it's a letter from dad, and I do that at the nursing homes, and that always goes down really well. They love that one, and I really enjoy saying it. You know, for 3 months I couldn't say the poem. It got me so sort of melancholy and upset when I read it. I had to stop. So I'm used to it now because it's 6 years down the track, but it's still, you know, Father's Day always gets me a bit sentimental. So I wrote a couple of new ones, and I know there's new listeners that probably are getting the gist of where I'm coming from with my four-line rhyming poetry, but, you know, you just don't know. There could be listeners out there who said, "Yeah, we heard this last time," but I'm always sort of like to introduce myself as where my poetry got originated from and how it all started, because it's just interesting, because, like, at 56, when I first discovered writing was just by accident. I hadn't picked up a pen in anger before that. I didn't even know I even liked poetry, and was only big through Facebook that someone said, "Come and look at surfing photos," that I started to comment in rhyme. That's how it all started. I just love to do it, and it's a passion there to do it, and that's where I want to head. I want to do my own sort of audience with Dip and Friends, where I actually get on stage and have a few musician friends that can put music to my poetry and be on stage, and I bring them up and I say my poem, and they actually do a musical version of my poem. So that would be great. I'd love to do that.
I've got a few. That'll be awesome.
I've got a few friends in Australia that who are willing to go back to grassroots. They're musicians in their own right, and they're willing to come down on stage and just come out of the audience and learn something. But the biggest problem I've got is because they've got their own music and their own, it's time, the time factor for those guys, where I've got all the time in the world, that they've got their own sort of their musical careers, but they are really keen to do that and come back to grassroots. And, you know, we get a place, as I said, the Brass Monkey, which is in Cronulla, which is just a restaurant that has serves food and has it's in a basement, and they have some amazing artists that come down, and we've had a few American guys come over that have been on the show down at the restaurant, and the owner's willing to give us a day down there if I get Mac together and say my poems and have this, and this is where I'd like to do, is get to the stage where I can get on stage and actually say my poems like I am to you on the air, but have them with the image up on the wall behind me, and then bring up some of my musician friends to put music to them. And that's where I want to go now with writing song lyrics. So,
when you do this, Dip, I want you to make sure that somebody videotapes it, so you can either upload the video to YouTube, or you can put parts of it up on Facebook or something like that, because I think that's a winning idea.
Well, I'd love to do it. I've got all the time to do it now. I don't wake up in the morning and think, "Oh, I've got to go to work today." And I'm fortunate that, you know, with the severance and that, I can do it and spend my time surfing and writing, and it's a great life at the moment. So I'm just lapping it up. It might change, you know. The way things are going, my wife said, "You've got to go back to work. You're too young to retire." But I think she just gets a bit jealous of me surfing every day, and says, "You know, why should I work while you're surfing?" So, but, you know, I did 35 years out the refinery, and, you know, I've got no guilt I did my time.
That's right.
You know, like this is my time in the sun, so to speak. So that's why I get down there every morning and do the boys at the College of Knowledge, we call it. We sit at the coffee table and it started off as the table of knowledge, and the College of Knowledge had a better rhyming factor to it. So it's all the
like
old blokes
that.
That are all retired, and we sit there, we read the paper, look at the politics that's going on, like Kanye West going for presidency in 2020. And I mean, the scary part of that is that is that the first lady will be Kim Kardashian.
Yeah, well, if that happens, I know,
it's a bit of a laughing thing here, but I mean, politics on both sides of the earth are a typical. You know, there's always someone that's going to be on one side and the other. And but I just noticed, look at all your presidents have been past actors or something. You know, there's always celebrities there. And but when I heard that on MTV the other day, I just couldn't help but get on Facebook and say that the scary part was that Kim Kardashian would be the first lady of politics. You can imagine that, you know.
Well,
I can imagine his policies. His policies, you know.
His
make you laugh.
Well, he'll be good on the world stage. Anytime, you know, Vladimir Putin gets up on a podium, he'll just shove him off and say, it's my turn to speak.
He'll do it in rap, too, you know.
In rap, yeah.
Yeah. So getting back to Dad, the fact that it's Father's Day this Sunday, I just thought I'd do a couple of poems here. And, you know, a lot of people go, geez, I tell you what, Mark, you're just like your father. You know, you look like your father. If you look at my book, there's a picture of Dad, and, you know, people say, God, that's you. And the last thing you want to know is you're going to end up like your dad. You know, when you're younger, you go, oh, I'll never be like Dad, you know. But, you know, now he's gone, I look back at Dad and I think, oh, I'd be proud to be like him. You know, there's certain
sure.
things in his life that you know, he's given me, you know, obviously the way I am built, you know, just my looks. And you sort of think, oh, no, I'm never going to be like him. But people see it, the apple don't fall too far from the tree, as they say. And so I wrote this poem called My Father Lives in Me, and it goes like this. And it's actually, I wrote this as a song. These ones I'm going to give you now, I've actually added choruses to them, and so I'll say them as a poem. But when I do the repetition part, see, I don't play. I'm learning guitar now just to get a bit of a chord situation, because when you're writing poems to music, you don't get the rhythm unless you can phrase it. If you've got that musical background, you can write knowing what tune would work. So I'm writing all these without knowing a tune, and when I ask people if they got a musical note or musical sort of ear or a voice and they want to add music to them, other than Bernie Taupin and Elton John, I don't think a lot of people are singer-songwriters. They actually write the words and music. A lot of them write the music before they write the words. So but then again, someone told me that there's a lot of these public companies that buy your lyrics, because as much as musicians can write music, a lot of them can't write words, and they buy your lyrics. And I'm thinking, gee, that could be fun. I mean, at the moment, it's not like it's my bread and butter. It's still fun. It's not a chore. If I ever lose that... And
well, what if you had
chore,
like Kylie come to you and say, okay, mate, I want to go ahead and take some of your poems and turn them into my next pop album. Would you say no?
No. You would, because, you know, it's just sort of, and I wouldn't want any sort of, just the fact that I knew that it was my work, I'd be rapt. Like, I've actually got a couple of known artists in Australia and who's playing around. One of them's playing around with a couple of my poems right now, and she was on The Voice. And I would be absolutely rapt to do a compilation of our album of just where she actually sings all my poems. It'd be a buzz. And look, I've got enough poems to do it. I mean, I've revisited hundreds of my poems and put choruses to them, and I know they do work. It's just a matter of the phrasing, and that's what it is. You see some of these musical notes where you see the lyrics and you go, that doesn't rhyme, but it's the way you phrase them and the way you accentuate the words that can make the difference. So that's why a lot of these poems can work, because they can be just rephrased or you know, take out a preposition or add a comma, and you'd be surprised what works lyrically in a music that you thought wouldn't work, but it does. And so this one's called "My Father Lives in Me," and it goes like this: I look at my reflection there, didn't realise it's plain to see just how much, just wasn't aware. My father lives in me. I see his face, I see his eyes, his personality. It really is hard to disguise. My father lives in me. My father lives in me, I see. My father lives in me. Suppose it's always meant to be. My father lives in me. A man who made me laugh and smile, loved me unconditionally, always made me feel worthwhile. My father lives in me. And as I look, I shed a tear for the man who'll always be a special person. It is quite clear. My father lives in me. My father lives in me, I see. My father lives in me. Suppose it always has to be. My father lives in me. My father lives in me. Oh, man, my father lives in me. Oh, he was my biggest fan. My father lives in me. You've got to remember the last few verses, actually the chorus. So when you read the poetry, musically, it can take on a totally different perception. And that's why I'm still, it's a learning curve for me, because I look at a lot of the lyrics and they're a lot simpler than what I write. I think I've got to sort of, for want of a better word, I've got to dumb them down a bit, because some of the best songs in the world are very simple lyrics and a lot of repetition, and it's the hook, it's the riff, you know,
right,
putting out stuff yourself. What works in a song, and you read it as just words, and you go, God, that's pretty simple. But some of the best songs are the ones that are just simple. So I know there's a lot of folky sort of music out there. Whether I've got too many words in them, that it just depends. A lot of people say that'll work, and I've had a few. This guy, that's a friend of my son's, Astro, who's the Kiwi guy, and he's actually put three songs together now, and I would have loved to have him for today, because they are just absolutely, he's got the voice of an angel. Honestly, if you saw the guy and saw this voice, you just wouldn't associate. And I'm sure that happens a lot, where you hear a voice on radio and you see the guy in life and you go, how can that voice come out of that guy or that girl? And it just surprises you all the time when you see these voice shows, and you see these America's Got Talent or England's Got Talent, and they get interviewed in the original pre song, and you go, God, and you see the judges are writing them off, and as soon as they start to sing, they go back and they pan back to the faces of the judges, and they're just blown away. And the classic case is that song Nessun Dorma. It was a famous poetic opera song there, and there was I think it was Britain's Got Talent. There was just a telephone technician named Paul Potts. He had the old buck teeth, and he's got on there, and they've all, you can see everyone giggling in the audience, and he's come out with this voice of this operatic voice that just, and it put tingles down you. I didn't think I'd ever have this emotion for opera like I did. It's the last thing I could think of. You know, I love all music, you know, be it rap, be it R&B, be it like all the old stuff. I love the rock and roll. I love going back to the 80s. But I never thought I'd have this, you know, when this guy came out with this song, it just changes you, you know. Music can just have that effect. That's the beauty of music. What one person's trash is another person's treasure. So, you know, the fact that we've all got different tastes.
Exactly. Well, and that's it. You know, everybody's going to have something that's going to be a little bit different. So, I mean, if, you know, it's some people like polka music, some people like country western, some people like rock and roll, some people like rap. And I can tell you, out of those four categories, which I really don't like, but it doesn't mean that's, you know, any less popular. So it's, you know, it's interesting to hear your take on subjects. But I love the poems that you write about your dad.
Yeah, well, actually, this last one, I wrote this a while. I wrote this after Dad passed away in a nursing home. Dad got dementia and I watched him deteriorate over 17 months. You know, like my mum went like bang, just massive heart attack in bed, and she was gone. But Dad, I watched Dad just go from the man he was to just a shell. And it was very sad. It was very sad. Mm. And I wrote this poem called Through My Father's Eyes, and it goes like this. I was there when he passed on. I really can't disguise the feeling I had when he was gone through my father's eyes. Love and tears won't bring him back. I suppose that is no surprise. Emotions and feelings I didn't lack through my father's eyes. The angels have taken my dad right now. They've taken him to heavenly skies. For I have forsaken, and I don't know how, through my father's eyes. If you have a dad who is still with you, I suppose this is what applies. Show him the love which always comes through when you look into your father's eyes. Tell him you love him. Go grab his hand. Tell him before he dies. I think he'll know, he'll understand when you tell him through his eyes. And I said that because it's Father's Day, and I do get a bit sort of sentimental at this time. But yeah, you know, I'm sure that a lot of people can relate to their dads at our age that you know, they're getting on in life. And, you know, I've got a lot of what we call, baby boomers, you know, because I was born in 54, and 50 to the 60s, you know, we're going to have parents that are, you know, into their 90s now and 80s. So, you know, whether they're in good health or not, but a lot of them got dementia and all that. So, you know, I always say to them, you know, really treasure the time you got with your parents while they're alive, because when they're gone, it's only the memories you have. And, you know, a lot of people are guilty of not sort of seeing, like when I got involved with the nursing home recitals, was because I went and visited my uncle, and I'd sit in there with my uncle, and all these people, older people, would come in and they'd sit in the room, and I thought, well, what are they doing in here? They've got no one to talk to. They're people. The culture over in Australia and probably in America too is, you know, you get old in certain cultures, and it's an honour to be old. They look after you, your folk. In Australia, you can't be quick enough to put you in a nursing home. I know my kids would be, you know, there's a bit of a joke going around, be nice to your kids because they'll choose your nursing home, and it's pretty well true. As soon as they're looking at, you know, we'll get you your nursing home and take over your house, and you think you bring up your kids and you give them everything, and then the next minute you're in a nursing home and you're forgotten. So I think I said to myself, you know, if I ever get a chance to give them something back, I want to do it. So that was the inspiration to say my poem to the nursing home. I mean, you're only seeing a very small snippet here, and because we've only got an hour. I mean, I could be here for 30 hours and go through all my love poems, but you know, like, it's just hard to get it all out there. That's why I want to do this. This, you know, and that's why we've been doing it on a monthly basis, and we, the trouble is, we get to talk and we digress.
Well, that's half the fun, though, you know, Dip. I hate to tell you that, but I just love chatting with you. You know, the poetry to me is a great fun, but I love visiting with you.
Well, you know, mate, I really do appreciate the time I get at the hour. And if it reaches other people out there, I mean, I don't know how many listeners you've got in America, but I've actually picked up a lot of American friends through my poem.
Well, they love you.
And, you know what, 4 years ago, I would never have thought I'd even have it. I mean, my passion's surfing before poetry, but you know what, it's becoming a close second now. I just love it. And I just, while I've ever got the muse to write, I'll continue. While it's ever not a chore, it's never a chore. You know, people go, I don't know how you can, I'll write this stuff in 3 minutes. I'll get out there and I'll see an image, and people go, oh, I've just spent 12 hours writing a poem. And I feel embarrassed to say, honestly, on this poet side, on this fan story, people go, you put out two poems a night, how do you do it? And I said, I don't know, I just see an image and write to. I need the inspiration, you know, but that's what happens. I don't know if I'm going to get cut short here, mate.
We have 30 seconds left, Dip. So you got to make it. Now it's down to 20.
All right, I'll just do a romance poem. Yeah, you know, I've got one here.
Okay, quick, go.
Okay, it's called I Hold You Closer. I hold you closer in my arms. My love for you grows stronger. You take me in with your secret charms. Just hope for so much longer. I caress your nape with soothing fingers. I hold you from behind. There's no escape whilst my love lingers. You reciprocate in kind. I love smell as I nuzzle you there. Your softness so alluring. I love the smell of your auburn hair. This love can never be curing. I hold your hips as we dance to the beat. We move here just as one. I taste your lips. They are so sweet. You make our loving fun. You make our loving fun, my sweet. You make our loving fun. There's no time to be discreet when we are here as one. We are here as one, my love. When we are here as one. You just can't get enough. Our love is so much fun. So that had a chorus to it, sort of Nelly. I know that I can play around with that, and people. But I've got
and dip with that. We are completely out of time. Everybody,
I can't believe
Mark and I could go on for we could go on for another 5 hours tonight. But you're going to have to catch Mark in September, and we'll have more. Well, dip, and we'll have more of his poetry next month in October.
It's on the site, Facebook.
Yeah, and if you like what you hear on the show page here on Rated G Radio, there's a link to Dip's Facebook page dedicated to his poetry. So just click that and like that and admire this great man's work. We're going to see you live on Thursday, our time, with intuitive advisor Jesse Neat. Everybody have a great night and don't drive to
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.